Take your Bible, turn to Ephesians, the fourth chapter, Ephesians chapter 4, and we will eventually get to Ephesians, the fourth chapter. We're going to talk about refueling our relationships tonight. Refueling our relationships. I don't know about you, but it seems like all of us have at different times relationships that are going and then some that are falling apart. How many of you have ever been hurt? Let me see if you've ever been hurt. Okay, all of us, right? And usually it starts in those closest to us. And it's a lot of times we do it just unintentionally. It can just be our words that we say. Some time ago, Debbie said to me, you're not even listening to me, are you? And I said, that's a funny way to start a conversation. I didn't say that. That's what I thought. But because sometimes just even in our home, there's just little things that we're just, you know what I found about getting old is that I have less of a filter than I used to have. And sometimes I say things, I said, did I really say that? I used to think that, but I think I just said that out loud. And we can do things unintentionally. I'm dealing with something right now with one of our family members where I did something. It was unintentional, but still, it's created a friction. And there are things in our marriages. There's things with our family, things with our parents, things with our siblings, things with our friends in college and high school, and there's relationships that are broken. I want to talk to you about how to restore those. Trying to cover this topic in a few minutes. By the way, I've been admonished to slow down in my speaking. The problem is if I slow down, the services will be longer. So you really don't want me to do that, okay? I'll try to enunciate better. But trying to cover topics like bitterness and forgiveness in just 40 minutes or so, it's like trying to explain nuclear fusion to a college science class. The potential is there, but it just takes a whole semester to unpack it. And in fact, I love science. I enjoy science. And in science, in nuclear physics, there are two things called fission and fusion. And fission is the splitting of atoms, and fusion is when these two atoms, after they've got split, they're in kind of close proximity, and because they're different in mass, they end up combining, and when they do, there's an explosion, and it's how you get an atomic bomb. And I think the same bitterness is like a nuclear fusion of two different people. They come close together. Because they're different in makeup, they explode, and large amounts of energy are released. And some of us are living behind a home of atomic bombs, everything exploding. On December 7th, 1941, most of you know Pearl Harbor was attacked. It was a surprise attack. 9 ships were sunk. 2,400 people died. 4 years later, August 6, 1945, the United States dropped the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima. 4 days later, Nagasaki. My dad was in the occupation troops that came in after that incident took place. And to try to comprehend the massiveness of this, it's hard to comprehend. I was trying to get some numbers on the population of Huntsville and the surrounding areas, the county, that isn't even big enough. The combined population of Nagasaki and Hiroshima was 600,000 people. It's like most of the northern section of your state, 600,000 people. And the initial blast, 150,000 people instantly died. And that was tragic enough. But we didn't really know what an atomic bomb was going to do. We'd never used atomic bombs before. And because of the radiation and the fallout and so forth, over the next 20 years, another 150,000 people died, slow death, because of cancer and radiation poisoning. So the fact was that the collateral damage was as damaging as the event itself. And I think that happens with bitterness. Bitterness is a spiritual atomic bomb that when the event takes place, there's certainly problems, but because it stews and festers over and over again, the collateral damage of that bitterness causes as much problems as the event itself. Someone has said that bitterness is like being stung to death by a bee one sting at a time. And little by little, over the time, and what I've found people say, yeah, I've already taken care, I have dealt with that. But it's just like the song we just sang. It's got to be dealt with again and again and again. I was just with a pastor in St. Pete, Florida. He sat through a meeting like we had here 3 years ago, 10 years ago. And he said, Steve, the thing that impacted me the most 10 years ago that I've used for the last 10 years is this statement, that bitterness is drinking poison thinking the other person is going to die. And some of us are holding on to things. There's friction, and we think, boy, we're really getting back at that person, but we're the one that is dying because we're the one that is holding it and not dealing with it God's way. And as a result of that, we are facing collateral damage. The Bible in Acts 8 calls it the gall of bitterness or the bile of bitterness. And some here tonight are stewing in the radiation of bitterness, and it's killing you little by little, one sting at a time. Here's another way to see it. Let's just say this is an intersection right down here, and I'm going to let, we haven't really rehearsed this. I hope this works out well. Cameron is going to help me with this. Cameron, you stand up if you would. Cameron likes football, right, Cameron? And he likes the Chicago Bears. I'm not sure why, but he does. And I've got Bryce back here, and I'm going to have Bryce come down. Just a minute, Bryce. Hang on. Pretend you're in a wedding. Wait till the director tells you. So Bryce is coming down this Parkway of Peace slowly. Go ahead, Brian. You can start coming. And Cameron is going to be a linebacker for the Chicago Bears. A little slower. And right here, this is Hurt Corner, and Cameron is going to hurt Bryce. Blindside him, okay? This is going to be a great tackle, okay? So, Bryce, you don't know what's going on. You're minding your own business. Walking down, here you come to Hurt Corner, and you don't even see Cameron over here. And here he comes, and action. Tremendous. You may have a job at the, there, okay, no. Wait, Bryce, you stay here, No. Cameron, you can leave. Okay, you're still here. You're stuck at her corner now, okay? You're spinning around. Okay. Don't get dizzy. Okay, that's good, right there. And now, he's got to make a decision. Either he can be pushed over into the bog of bitterness, where some of us live, or he can choose the freeway of forgiveness. Okay, you think about what you're going to do to get even with him or to forgive him. You think about it for a while. Okay, go over it. Okay, so all of us have come at some point in our life to Hurt Corner, and we've got blindsided. Didn't see it coming. Someone said something. Someone did something. And some of us have built our house at Hurt Corner. And we just feel like we just go round and round and round, and one person after another. And a mature person sees the value of forgiveness. But once you've been blindsided one too many times, you just stop forgiving. You just see that person done that so many times. I am not going to forgive that person. And I don't know who it is in your life that has been barreling down this road of insensitivity. It may be due to stupidity. It may be vindictiveness. It may be because of their own personal hurt, because hurting people hurt others. But at Hurt Corner, every single one of us here tonight is either the one being hurt or we're the hurtee, the hurter or the hurtee. Is that even a word? But we're either the one causing the hurt or the one being hurt. And the reality is, most of us are both. In some relationships, we're the ones that are being hurt. And because of that, in other relationships, we're the ones that's doing the hurt. And you can either continue down the road of bitterness, or you can stop, turn around again, choose the path of forgiveness. And I want you to look at it through both of those lenses, because we're all there in both lenses. Now, here's the first step to this process. As you think about bitterness, the first thing you've got to realize is that all bitterness is ultimately directed towards God. If you don't realize that, you're not going to go any farther. If you say, I'm not bitter at God, I'm bitter at that person. No, you don't have a person problem. If you're bitter, you have a God problem. Because everything in your life has been sifted through his hands. And so don't say, oh, I'm not mad at God, I'm mad at that person, because it's not true. And the first person you've got to go to is choose to say, God, I've been bitter at you because you allowed this circumstance, this person, this situation. Once you get past that, Then we can talk about how to deal with people. The truth is, we don't start there very often. Now, I want to give you, I'm going to break this down as simply as I can. Just call this relationship math. I'm going to give you the answer, then I'm going to walk through a passage that talks about it. But here's the answer. Here's how you deal and how you refresh and refuel relationships. One, it's very simple. It's just simple math. Stop, subtract hurtful actions. Stop hurting people. Stop blindsiding people. Stop saying things, doing things. Subtract that from your life. And then if you will add confession where you have been the one hurting people and go back and say, I was wrong. I did that again. I said that again. I was unkind again. So you add that and then you multiply forgiveness because it's not a one-time act. It's over and over and over again, and multiply forgiveness and that equals peace. You want to have peace in your life? There's the solution to peace in relationships, in your home, in your church, at your job. Stop hurting people, confess where you have, and choose to forgive those that have wronged you, and you will have peace. It's as simple as that. We all know the story where Jesus is talking to the disciples, and Peter says, how often should I forgive my brother? And he says, how about 7 times? And Jesus said, I don't say to you 7 times, 70 times 7, 490 times. What does that mean? Here's where I think we've missed it with bitterness. We think, yeah, that person wronged me and I've forgiven him. I'm done with that. But the fact is, they may not hurt you again, but you're going to think about it again. And the reason Jesus said 490 is not because someone's going to hurt you 490 times, but you're going to think about it 490 times. And forgiveness has to be again and again and again. Every time it comes up, again, God, thank you for that situation. Thank you for that person. I saw this little cartoon, thought it was good. Jesus says, I tell you not 7 times, but 70 times seven. One of the disciples says, oh, great. Now I have to forgive, but I have to do math too. And the fact is, forgive, it's easier than math. Stop keeping track. Stop saying, that's the 10th time you've done that, the 20th time you've done that. Don't do that. Choose forgiveness. Now, many of us could go through, look at Ephesians 4 with me now. Many of you could go through Ephesians 4 and quote this passage. There are 100 messages in this short passage. I mean, the first part of chapter 4 talks about unity of the Spirit, then the Christian's walk. And then toward the end of the chapter, he begins to give us some ways to put off the old and put on the new. He gets specific. And really, this is how to have unity that he talks about there in the first part of the chapter. How do we have unity in the body of Christ? This is not quantum physics. It's not nuclear fusion. It's simple math. And sometimes it seems like we do simple things and we say it over and over and over again. Don't you get at times feel like you're just saying things needlessly? Sometimes when I talk about bitterness, I think everyone knows this, but it's like, you know, you say, close the door, pick up the towel, don't leave your underwear in the middle of the floor. That's just a wife to her husband. And so how many times do we need to hear something before we really do it? But here's the solution. Stop hurting people. It's very simple. Stop hurting people. And then secondly, ask forgiveness where you have hurt people and confess and forgive those that have hurt you. I know that sounds so simple, so elementary, but for some reason, we just don't do it. So let's put some handles on it. Ephesians chapter 4 does. So let's go to those handles that it puts on it and see what they say. So here we start. It says, therefore, verse 25, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one, to his neighbor, for he remembers one of another. So the first thing he says here, if you want to deal with this God's way, if you want to have right relationship, stop lying. Stop telling lies. We get pushed off the road. When was the last time you told a lie? Now you have on a little card that we passed out to you, has some blanks on it, and one line is for people you need to go to and confess, and the second line is for people you need to forgive, right? Two lines. And if you have told someone lies, you need to put their name on that line. Is there someone you have lied to? Or you say, well, it wasn't really a lie, it was a half-truth. Half-truth with intent to deceive is a lie. I remember in high school, I would tell my parents, I'm going to the library. And I would go to the library. I'd walk in the library and walk out. And so I could honestly say I went to the library. But that was an intent. It was a half-truth. I was deceiving them, but I was guilty enough. I couldn't just, you know, not do what I said I was going to do. But it's still a lie. Maybe you are manipulating someone by lying. If you have lied to someone, write their name down. Or maybe you've been lied to. If you've been lied to, then you need to forgive that person. So if someone's lied to you, put their name down on the lie list and say, I need to go back to that person. Maybe you made a promise that you didn't keep. That's a lie. Go back and ask forgiveness. Maybe someone told you a lie. Some of us have lived a lie. I was in a meeting here in Alabama, and there was a lady who came to me, and she said, I don't really know what to do. She said, I grew up in a really dysfunctional home, and I went to school, and I made up a family. I told my friends I had these great siblings and great parents, because I was so embarrassed, I just made them up. I got out of high school, I went in the military, and I was dishonorably discharged. I tried to get a job, and I wasn't able to get one because of that. I tried college for a while. That didn't work out. So I forged some documents that showed I had an honorable discharge. I forged two documents that showed I graduated from college and nursing school, forged them. I got a job as a nurse. I served as a nurse for 20 years. And my whole life was a lie. I got married, that didn't work out, got divorced. And now, 5 years ago, I married the man I'm currently married to. And he thinks I am just perfect. He thinks I served in the military. He thinks I went to college. He thinks I got a nursing degree. He's seen I was a nurse all these years. And if I go to him and tell him it was all a lie, I made my whole life up, he's gonna leave me. She said, what should I do? I said, well, you can go through your life a liar, or you can trust God and get honest and see what God does. I remember Debbie and I sat down with she and her husband as she shared with him the truth of her life story and what really happened as she grew up and that she had forged these documents and she wasn't even a nurse. And I mean, she did it, but she didn't have a degree or anything. And I saw that husband melt and go and put his arms around her. I got a letter from her a couple years later, and she says, Steve, these have been the best years of my life. I finally got honest, and God is using her in great ways. Some of you are just lived a lie, and you've not been honest with somebody. Something happened to you when you were younger. You've not told anybody about that. You've not told your husband, your wife, and you're living this lie. And you think, I'm never going to get honest about that. Then you're going to be miserable. And it says here, if you're going to be what God wants you to be, if there's going to be unity, then you've got to go and get honest. Have you ever been lied to? Are you bitter because you've been lied to? Were you promised something and they didn't come through? Write their name down. You're bitter towards them. You've got to choose to forgive. Here's the second one. It says, verse 26, be angry, but don't sin. So the second thing is anger. This is anger you've gone to bed with. It's not wrong to be angry. It's what you do with that anger. Anger is indication, prolonged anger is an indication of unresolved bitterness. It doesn't say don't be angry. It says don't let your anger turn to sin. Don't take your anger to bed with you. Debbie and I have made a commitment that we are not going to go to sleep angry with each other. We stay up all night sometimes, but we want to walk that thing through, right? And you've met people who are just walking advertisements of anger. I saw this shirt. Some people should wear it. Warning, contains resentment and bitterness. You ever met somebody like that? They don't need to wear that shirt, but you just know when you're around them, man, that person is bitter and resentful. And you think no one sees it. You wear it on your face. You wear it in your life. Who are you spewing your anger on? I tell you, most of us are spewing it on the people who live behind the doors of our home. Most of us are angry at the people that we live with. You can tell by the volume. We had a couple team members who are staying, and thank you for those of you that are hosting our team members. We were in a meeting where a lady came to give a testimony, and she said, I have two grade school kids. Normally, we get up in the morning, and everything is really good, and we get ready to go, and school's off, and breakfast, and food, and everything. She said, these last few days, it has been chaos at our house. I mean, no one's getting dressed. They're late. Their breakfast isn't eaten. And she said, I finally realized why. I've got these two team members in our home. She said, normally, for the first hour of the day, I yell at my kids. But I can't yell because I have these guests in my home. And my kids don't know what to do. Mom's not yelling. So they don't do anything. They just kind of stand around, right? And she said, I realize I run my house by anger. And most of us, if we got honest, we'd have to go home tonight and say to those in our home, the way I've lived behind the doors of home has not been Christ-like. I was in a meeting where a staff member gave a testimony. He said, my grade school daughter caned me this week. She said, Daddy, I like you better at church. He said, I know what she was saying. At church, I'm so kind. I'm helping people, opening doors. At home, that's not the way I am. And that anger spews out on the people we love the most. And most of us, if we were honest, we'll have to go home tonight and get our family together and just say, you know, we need to have a conversation. I have not been Christ-like behind the doors of this home. Here's the next one. It says, be angry, or number three, number 27, and don't give place to the enemy. I'm just going to call this wrong choices. Don't open the door to the enemy. Don't open the door to the enemy. I was, some time ago, I have a new favorite bookstore. My new favorite bookstore, there's not many bookstores around anymore, but my new favorite bookstore is Hobby Lobby. At Hobby Lobby, they have like one rack of books, like 25 each side. I don't really like Hobby Lobby. Let me just tell you, I don't like craft stores. And you know, my wife, she says, honey, you want to go to the craft store? No. Why would I want to go? She said, I want your opinion. I'll give it. I don't care. That's my opinion. I don't really care. And she said, I said, what are we going to do there? She said, I want to get some knickknacks. You know what a knickknack is? Look it up in the dictionary. I looked it up. A knickknack is a small, worthless object. That's what a knickknack is. And so, you know, I said, I don't. What do you want me to go? I want your opinion. Like, I don't have an opinion. We were there one time, and she brought me these two balls. If you had offered me $1 million, I couldn't tell you what they were for. She said, which one do you like? I said, what do you do with them? Is there a bat? I mean, is there a game that we do? She said, you look at them. She said, you know that shelf by the TV? I said, no. But there's a shelf, why don't you just give them, put them next to that non-functional soap in the bathroom that we can't use, you know? Anyway, where was I at? Oh yeah, Hobby Lobby, back to Hobby Lobby. So I'm at my favorite bookstore recently, Hobby Lobby, and it's great. I like, she goes and she looks around and I get to read. And so I was reading this book, it's a new book by Louis Giglio, and the title of the book is Don't Give the Enemy a Seat at Your Table. And so I read the first couple chapters. She was there a long time. And the first chapter, I actually did buy it, but the first chapter, a situation has come up, and he finds some new information about it. So he writes this scathing letter to this person, and he gives it to a friend first. He says, I'm thinking about sending this letter. Do you think I should send it? And his friend sends him back a text that simply says, don't give the enemy a seat at your table. And it's taken, I've never seen this in the 23rd Psalm, where it says, he prepares a table before us in the presence of our enemies. And so here God has prepared this table. He's going to sit down and have conversation with us. You know what we do? We say, Satan, pull up a chair here. What do you think about this? Do you think I should be forgiving this person? Satan, what do you think? And the whole book is don't give the enemy a choice. If you're going to make a choice, don't make wrong choices. Don't get the enemy's opinion about that. Let me give you a little rabbit trail here. And there's a lot of things. Some of you remember the story that we shared with you 3 years ago just about some things that we're walking through with one of our kids. And I want to tell you the most current lesson that I've learned. There are four things that determine the outcome of a child or a person. You got to write these down. These are the four things that determine the outcome of a child or a person. Number one is nature. We're all born with a sin nature, and we have propensities. And so that has to be dealt with by God. Secondly is nurture. That's your job. That's my job as parents. Bring them up in the nurture admonition of the Lord. Thirdly is choices. A person, a child or an adult, is a result of their choices. You can choose your choices, but you can't choose the consequences of your choices. And fourthly is the grace of God. So what that tells me is I am 25% responsible for the outcome of my child. And so I can't take credit for the right choices they make, but I'm not going to take credit for the wrong choices that my adult children make. Why would it surprise us that our adult children make wrong choices? I'm an adult. I make wrong choices at times. So why should that surprise us? And a child is a result of their nature, their nurture, their choices, and it's all overshadowed. Everything that we do that's right is shattered by the grace of God. That's been helpful over the last couple of years as I've shared that with parents who just feel always guilty about their child didn't make a right choice or didn't do this. You can't sit there and boast about the right choices, but you can't accept the guilt of the wrong choices because you're a result of your choices. And so what he says here is don't make wrong choices. Don't give the devil an opportunity. Don't give him a seat at your table. Have you been doing that? Have you been opening the door to the enemy? I think so many times we are inviting him into things that we never should have invited him into. Has someone else's bad choices affected you? I know it's difficult for me sometimes when someone close to me makes the wrong choice and that affects me. I have a tendency to develop bitterness toward that person, and I've got to choose in that situation to thank God for that person. And some of us have gotten bitter, not because of our choices, because of how others' choices have affected us. Your parents got divorced, or your child did something, your husband made a poor financial decision, or whatever it is. You've heard it said that children, when they're little, step on your toes, and when they get older, they step on your heart. And that's true, but don't get bitter at them for their wrong choices. Don't get bitter at yourself. Don't be self-loathing. Oh, man, I've made so many bad choices. I hate myself. Don't do that. Nature, nurture, choices, and grace. Okay, here's the next one. I got to move on. Verse 28. He who steals must steal no longer, but rather labor with his hands. So the fourth thing is that we can get bitter about, or that we can cause bitterness in others, is stealing. I could give you 1,000 illustrations of people in days like this that have realized they have something in their home that does not belong to them, and they've made it right. They've taken it back. And you may have things in your home that you've stolen. Maybe you didn't mean to. Maybe it was just whatever, but it's there, and you've got to take care of that. And if you want to have right relationships, you've got to go back where you've stolen something. Take it back. I was in California some time ago, and a pastor came before his church. He said, I had to go to Taco Bell this week and ask forgiveness. He said, for the last year, every week, once a week, we just have a family outing and we go to Taco Bell. And when I leave, I take a stack of napkins, enough to last me for a week. There's no sign that says how many you can take. And so for the last year, we've bought no napkins at our house because we have Taco Bell napkins. And God said to me this week, you stole those napkins. He said, I went down to the manager of Taco Bell this week, and I said, I've been doing this for a year. I've stolen a year's worth of napkins. How much do you think they're worth? And he paid back Taco Bell for stolen napkins. You say, that is so small. That's so silly. That's so minor. If I was the devil, you know what I would do? That's not an announcement. But if I was the devil, I would try to get you to commit a sin so small you wouldn't deal with it, but so big I could eat your lunch with it. Maybe just things you picked up at the office, things you've stolen. They're not going to miss this, pens, papers, whatever. What do you have in your house that does not belong to you? What have you pilfered? Or maybe, if so, put them on that line that you need to go back and ask forgiveness if you've stolen something. Or maybe something's been stolen from you. Maybe you're bitter because someone stole your purity, and you've been bitter at them. Someone stole your trust. Start by thanking God. You may not be able to have contact with that person. Maybe you shouldn't, but you can start by thanking God. I have a dear friend and his wife sat through a meeting just like this, like we did 3 years ago, and God convicted his husband that years before he had had a one-time affair. And he said, I needed for accountability for my own life to tell my wife. I'm not saying everybody has to do that, but he said, for me, he said, I just felt like I needed that accountability. And I went to my wife, and it was hard. She forgave me, and his wife forgave him, but she had a hard time forgiving this other person. Didn't even know who it was. Would never, and it was in another country. Would never see this person. Could never find who it was. But she said, I just had a hard time. I developed bitterness toward this unknown person. So you know what she did? She gave that person a name, called her Sue, and just started praying for her, that God would bring her to himself. So I'll never see Sue, but I pray daily for her salvation. I pray for her life. And she said, God now has given me a love for this person that I've never known, never met. Because when you pray for someone, it's hard to be mad at someone you're praying for. Amen. And start praying for those people that you're bitter towards. And God set her free from her bitterness as she began not only thank God, but to pray for the person who was the focus and the source of that bitterness. Here's the next one, verse 29. Let no unwholesome words proceed from your mouth, but only a word that is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, that may give grace to those who hear. So words. Are there words you've said that you wish you could take back? Man, I've got some of those. I've said things, and as soon as I said them, I just wish I could hit that rewind button. Did I really say that? I didn't mean to say that. Have you gone back and asked forgiveness from those people that you've said things? Again, probably starting right in your home. I was in a meeting some time ago, and I shared some of these things, and there was a man sitting in the last row, and after he said, I'm sitting there, we got the invitation, and he said, I realized the Spirit of God was saying to me, I need to go back to my first wife. 14 years ago, I got divorced. It was horrible. We said horrible things. It was a horrible situation. And I'm sitting there, and God said, I'd not even seen her. I got remarried a year later. He said, I've not seen her in 13 years. God said, you need to go back and ask her to forgive you. I said, God, I don't even know where she is. I'm sitting there, and my current wife elbows me. I said, well, what? And she says, you know who you need to go to? I said, who? Your first wife. He said, now you're telling me this. My wife's telling me it. The Spirit of God's telling me this. And so finally, at the end of the service, I said, God, you're right. It was horrible things I said. I don't even know where she is. Haven't seen her in 13 years. But I will go back and ask her to forgive me. He said, Steve, you said amen. We all stood up. I turned around, and there that woman stood in the aisle. I'd not seen her for 13 years. She just sat through the same service I had just heard. I said, did you ask her to forgive you? He said, no, I didn't know what to do. I was just so shocked. The next day he went back and did it. But the point is, God will make a way. If you will say, God, I want to take care of this. Have you been crushed by someone's words? They may not come to you. They might ask forgiveness. You don't forgive someone when they ask you. You give them before they ask you. You say, well, if they come ask me, I'll do it. Aren't you glad God didn't say, when those people get perfect, I'll die for them. In that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us, right? And so maybe there are the things that you said, or maybe things you didn't say. If you were here 3 years ago at the family thing, I said there are three things every child wants to hear their parents say. I love you, I'm proud of you, and I was wrong. And if you've not said those things to your children, if you do nothing else, go home and write them a note, send them an email, and tell them you love them, tell them you're proud of them, and tell them where you've been wrong. Ask their forgiveness. Here's the last one, verse 30. And don't grieve the Holy Spirit. I'm just going to put this in back up in wrong choices. Don't grieve the Holy Spirit. Don't say yes to the enemy, and don't say no to the Spirit. It is always a bad decision to open the door to the enemy, and it's always a bad decision to close the door on the Spirit. Now, he goes on here and gives a solution. He says, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to stop hurting people. He says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you. Stop hurting people. Hurting people hurt others. Bitter people produce bitter relationships. And he defines the ingredients of the poison of bitterness as wrath and anger and clamor and slander, all these things. These are things we need to forgive. And the solution, he continues on, is ask forgiveness where you've hurt others. And then he says, verse 32, be kind, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. So I haven't done anything wrong. Well, that may be the evidence of a hard heart. It's hard to imagine. I mean, there is never a month goes by in our house where either I'm not asking Debbie to forgive me for something or she's not asking for me. There's never a month. It's hard to imagine that anybody could go through months of their life without hurting someone in some way, unintentionally at least. And you know, you don't just ask forgiveness for things you know you did. Sometimes it's their perception of what you did. I've got to take care of something right now that my heart was not in the wrong place, but apparently I communicated something and it caused hurt, and I've got to go back to that person and say, I was wrong, will you please forgive me? Be forgiving, choose to forgive. Bitterness will destroy you. So choose to forgive those that have hurt you. Bitterness is assuming a right you don't have. Forgiveness is obeying a command you have no right to disregard. So the Bible tells us to be forgiving. It's your choice. Now, I'm not saying it's easy. I was in a meeting in Dallas-Fort Worth area, Arlington, Texas. And there was a lady whose son had been killed in a horrible scenario. And on the way to church, between Dallas and Fort Worth, there's just a few major roads there. And to get to this church, she had to drive constantly past this road where her son was killed. She said it happened years ago. But every time we pass over that road on the freeway, I'd look the other direction. I've not looked down that road in over 2 years. I can't, because it reminds me. And she said, it's a natural reaction. Every time we come, and we drive all the time over this road, over on the freeway, and I looked the other way. She said, I went to God, and I chose to thank him for the hurt that we experienced with the loss of our son. She said, we came to church tonight. We went over that intersection, and for the first time in years, I looked down that road. Now, that may be not significant to you, but it was pretty significant to her. To forgive those that have wronged you. So bitterness is assuming a right you don't have. Giving forgiveness is obeying a command you have no right to disregard. So where do we go with this? Well, you make a list. You have a piece of paper there. Choose, and so I want you to write down some names. I am choosing to forgive. Who are the people? They haven't asked you. They may never ask you. But who are the people you've got to, again, 490 times, every time you think about it, I'm choosing to forgive them again and again and again, because every time you think about it, you once again have to choose to forgive. And who are the people that you've got to say, I've got to ask, some of you need to put down your family on that list. And just say tonight, I've got to go to them and say to them, it may be a roommate, it may be someone you work with, and say, I have not represented Christ to you. Will you please forgive me? Do you have a person that you're bitter towards that you can't really express that because they hold some position in your life? Well, you still need to go back to them. You need to ask forgiveness. Give forgiveness. Do both of those. And then I want to challenge you to do something. I want you to think of someone who's here tonight that you can go to before you leave and say, listen, I've got to go back to some people. I need some accountability. I think we all know to do this. Why don't we do it? Because without accountability, the Christian life is optional. Because we don't do what is expected, we do what is inspected, right? And if you want to really make this real in your heart, then go to someone even tonight and say, listen, I've got to go to some people, and I want you to ask me next week if I've done it or not. I want some accountability. Go to a pastor, go to a small group leader, go to a friend, go to someone you came with and just say, would you hold me accountable? I need to do this. I don't want to do this. I need to do this. And if you'll hold me accountable, I'll some of us are waiting for a feeling to do this. I would say that the Christian life is not a feeling. Forgiveness is not a feeling, it's a choice. And the problem with Christianity today is we live by our feelings. Sometimes I don't feel like serving. Sometimes I don't feel like loving. Sometimes I don't feel like getting up and spending time with God. Sometimes I don't feel like forgiving people. Sometimes I don't feel like asking forgiveness. I'd be embarrassed to make a list for you of all the things I don't feel like doing at times. But that's not what God has asked. And forgiveness is a daily choice that's required of every true follower of Christ. And here's the last thing. Prepare for future hurt. And the reason I add this is because I'd like to say that you're not going to come to Hurt Corner again. But the reality is, unless you are ready for this, Cameron, bring me one of those cups, will you? Unless you're ready for this, you're going to be in trouble because it's going to happen again. Take out that little styrofoam cup that you have. And I want to close this. I heard a story one time about the Undersecretary of Defense. You know, the president has a cabinet of individuals, and there's the Secretary of Energy and Education, Interior, and so forth, and Secretary of Defense. The Secretary of Defense has a budget of $750 billion. And under him is the Undersecretary of Defense, who basically does a lot of the execution of those things. A lot of times the guys that sit in the office, they're kind of somewhat of a figurehead. But there was a former Undersecretary of Defense who was giving a lecture at a huge conference. He had given a lecture the year before at the same conference when he was the Secretary of Defense. Now there had been a presidential change, and so now he was removed, and he was the former Undersecretary of Defense. And in the middle of his lecture on defense that he was giving, he picked up a styrofoam coffee cup he had on the lectern and took a drink of coffee and kind of interrupted his own speech. He said, last year, I came to this conference. He said, I was the Undersecretary of Defense. I flew first class. Someone picked me up at the airport. They took me to the hotel where they'd already checked me in. They carried my bags up to my room, gave me my key. The next morning, I came down the lobby. Someone was there to greet me. They put me in a limousine and drove me to this arena. They took me in the back into the green room, and they gave me a nice, steaming, hot cup of coffee in a beautiful ceramic mug. He said, this year, I'm at the same conference. I'm not the Undersecretary of Defense. I flew coach. When I got here to the airport, no one picked me up. I had to get a taxi and get to the hotel. When I got here to the hotel, I had to wait in a long line to get checked in. I carried my bags up to my room. This morning I came down, there was no one to greet me, and I caught a taxi, and I came in the front of this convention center with the rest of everyone else here, all these people are here. I weaved my way to the backstage, and I said to one of the technicians, is there any coffee? He said, yeah, there's a machine over there, and there's some styrofoam cups. He said, this may be the most important thing I say to you in this entire conference. He said, what I realized was all the perks that were mine last year were not meant for me. They were meant for the position that I held. All I deserve is a styrofoam cup. He said, there's going to come a time when all the perks and things that you have are going to be taken off and passed to someone else. And if you can remember at that moment that all you deserve is a styrofoam cup, it'll keep you from getting bitter. And I want to say, if you can keep this perspective, take this styrofoam cup, maybe write your name on it and put it on your desk or somewhere you can see it. And every time you think, man, that person said that, did it, remember this, all you deserve is a styrofoam cup. And if you can keep that perspective, it'll help you at Hurt Corner. It'll help you when things don't go your way and you remember, wait a minute, I didn't do all the goodness that has happened in the past. All I deserved was a styrofoam cup. And if that's your expectation, you can keep from hurt. And why should it shock us when people are the way they are? The creator of the universe came to earth in the form of a styrofoam cup. And what happened to him? That's what they did to him. Why would I expect any different? Is the servant greater than his master? And if I can keep that perspective, it'll guard me in the future from hurt that is inevitably going to come. All you deserve is a styrofoam cup. Let's bow our heads and close our eyes. I don't know your list, but I hope you'll take some time to get alone, write on your cup, "This is all I deserve." Remember that. I hope you'll have a conversation when you get home with your family. In fact, I'd like to end the service this way. I'd like you just to have a conversation with someone sitting right by you right now. And maybe ask them some questions or just share with them what God has been saying to you. It's very easy for us to hear truth that we need to contemplate and think through and then just kind of move on to fellowship, which is great to fellowship. But before you slip out, I want you to have a conversation with someone around you and just say, you know, here's what God is showing me. Maybe you can even ask someone right around you that you came with to hold you accountable. Say, we need to have a conversation about, I need to go to this person. And before you just switch gears and move into some other mode, take some moment to talk with some people right around you, two or three if you want. What did God say to you tonight? Where is God putting his finger in your heart? There's value in accountability. Father, I don't know what you're saying to individuals here, but I know our culture is steeped in bitterness. And it's not natural for me to thank you for things that are uncomfortable. But I know that some of the greatest growth periods of my life, even in the last 10 years, have been because of hurt. And when I get hurt, if I respond correctly, then I develop greater intimacy with you. If I respond wrong, I get distant.